Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. Today, I'm recording this podcast on November 10th, 2008. This is podcast number 42. The PE10 level today is 16. That's fair value. So stocks purchased today offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Saving William Bengen. William Bengen is he's a financial planner, and I am not terribly familiar with his work. I've heard his name many times because I write about safe withdrawal rates, and Bengen is a leader in the safe withdrawal rate field. He is one of the primary people responsible for the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and I am the lead proponent of the new school safe withdrawal research. The difference between the two approaches is the old school studies say that there is only one safe withdrawal rate, 4%. 4% is the safe withdrawal rate, the amount that you can take out of a retirement portfolio and be virtually certain that your portfolio will survive 30 years, that's always 4%, regardless of the valuation level that applies on the starting date of the retirement. The new school research says that the safe withdrawal rate varies depending on the valuation level that applies at the beginning of the retirement. So at times of high valuations, the safe withdrawal rate might drop as low as 2%, and at times of very low valuations, the safe withdrawal rate might rise as high as 9%. And John Walter Russell is the lead researcher in the new school of safe withdrawal rate analysis. And so that's how I am familiar with Bill Bengen. And I want to start this podcast, in a way, is very similar to the last one. The last podcast was called Bogle and Valuations. And in that one, I talked about a comment by John Bogle. And John Bogle, I've described him as the godfather of the rational investing school. The rational investing model of understanding how stock investing works says that valuations affect long-term returns, and that investors must take that into consideration in deciding on a stock allocation if they are to have any realistic hope of being successful long-term investors. John Bogle, I view him as the godfather of the rational investing model, because Bogle is the person I learned many of the insights that got me started in development of that model. But Bogle is also, strangely enough, the lead proponent of the contrary model. The model that is dominant today is the passive investing model. And that model says there is no need to change your stock allocation, even when stock prices get to insanely dangerous levels. And so Bogle has sort of got one foot in both camps. And what the last podcast was about, podcast number 41, was a statement that Bogle made in which he pointed out that if you the value assigned to U.S. business by the price of stocks is today $8 trillion less than what it was 12 months ago. And Bogle pointed out that that's just crazy. If anyone who believes that the value of U.S. businesses have declined by $8 trillion in the past 12 months is a fool. And I pointed out that I absolutely agree with Bogle on that point. But of course, the trouble is he reaches the wrong conclusion. Bogle's conclusion is that therefore, we don't need to, I don't know exactly what his conclusion is, but I guess what he's saying is sort of implicit when he says that, and he's saying it from a passive investing viewpoint, that the idea seems to be that it's safe to invest in stocks today. And that's true. It is safe to invest in stocks today. And so in that to that extent, I agree with Bogle. But what he seems to miss, although he seems tantalizingly close to realizing the flaw that has caused all the troubles with Bogle's investing advice for several decades now, is that if the value assigned to U.S. businesses has declined by $8 trillion, the value assigned by the market to U.S. businesses has declined by $8 trillion over the course of a year, and if that's crazy, which it is, that tells us the most important thing we all need to learn to bury this discredited passive investing model 10 feet in the ground. It shows us that the market is not efficient at all. The market is wildly inefficient, or else the price would not have been off by $8 trillion. So once we all come to realize that, I hope that we can put this passive investing model behind us and turn our attention to development of the rational investing model, which is, I believe, the investing model of the future. So the earlier podcast looked at a statement by John Bogle and sort of explored it from different angles and what it tells us about the future of investing and what it tells us about how we've gotten on the wrong track and what we need to do to get back on the right track and so forth. And this podcast is going to be similar in that this podcast focuses on a statement by William Bengen, a lead old school safe withdrawal rate researcher. And similarly, I think there's a lot of optimism present in some of these comments. And I want to start off with the most optimistic comment of all. And I just received this email. It's just a couple of hours ago. I received it around lunchtime from Michael Kitsis. And I have a number. Michael Kitsis is also a financial planner. And he's meeting with William Bengen tonight. They're going to be having dinner tonight and speaking at a conference tomorrow. And Michael and I have exchanged in numerous emails, and I've published them at the website. So if you want to take a look at those, I think you'll learn a lot by reading the correspondence between Michael and myself. And those emails have been published at the blog, at my website. The website is passionsaving.com. The blog is called A Rich Life. And if you enter Kitsis, K-I-T-C-E-S, in the search box there at the top of the homepage of the blog, you'll probably turn up 20 articles that contain the correspondence between Michael and myself. And we really explore just about all of the issues that have come up in the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. With Michael, I wouldn't say we disagree. We are in agreement on many points. We certainly both agree that valuations affect long-term returns. But Michael and I disagree on whether the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid or not. Michael maintains that they are analytically valid, and I maintain they are not analytically invalid. They are not analytically valid. But here's an exciting comment by Michael Kitsis, and this is not some guy who posts on the internet like Rob Bennett. This is a guy who's involved in the financial planning field. This is his livelihood. And I'm going to be reading more of this email, but I want to read this comment right off the bat just to get things off on the right foot. He says, this is Michael, "I find that a lot of planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs and reevaluate them in light of the recent market events." Wow. Is that encouraging? That's, that makes my day. That's what we need to hear. I'm going to read it again. That just makes me so happy. "I find that a lot of planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs and reevaluate them in light of the recent market events." Of course, he's talking about the stock crash, where we lost the $8 trillion. Oh, if only the experts in this field would be willing to question their passive investing beliefs. in light of this market crash, this loss of $8 trillion, what we could do to the field of financial planning. And I don't want to go over old territory. I want to move on to the new material, but because some people, you know, pick up a podcast without having heard the other ones, I feel a need to at least give a tiny bit of background. The state of play is that people, of course, have been investing for a long time. Back in the early 1960s, Eugene Fama came out with this idea of the efficient market theory. And it was an exciting theory. It was an advance in our understanding of how stock investing works. And it was flawed. The theory has been discredited. Eugene Fama was wrong. But it sparked a lot of exciting research, and we learned all sorts of things. And for a time, the efficient market theory was state-of-the-art belief as to how stock investing works. And, you know, so there was no getting something wrong in the research field. It's just, it's not a problem. It's a good thing sometimes, because when you try something and you get it wrong, you can learn from that. So that was, all that is fine, all that was wonderful. But then, you know, for various reasons, the financial planning community became locked in to the efficient market theory. Say in the 1970s, with the publication of A Random Walk Down Wall Street and the founding of the Vanguard Group of mutual funds. And then in the 1980s, late 1980s, we began to see research showing that the efficient market theory does not work. It's a failed model. And then in the 1990s, stocks took off wildly, and the public became wildly supportive of this theory, the efficient market theory / passive investing. The efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for the passive investing model, which says you do not need to change your stock allocation in response to changes in prices. And of course, by the end of the 1990s, stocks stopped going forward. We had 8 years where stocks provided a return of essentially zero, while the super safe asset classes outperformed stocks. And now in the last 12 months, we've had a massive price crash where we've collectively lost $8 trillion of accumulated wealth. What we need to do is to acknowledge that the passive investing model has failed and open the door to consideration of new investing ideas. And that's what we've been working on in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities dating back 6-7 years now, during the first 6 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. And we've learned some wonderful, wonderful things. We've learned that stock investing is less risky than most people think it is, not more risky. This price crash doesn't show us that stock investing is more risky. It opens the door to us learning that it's much less risky than we ever knew. Stock investing is better than you have been told, not worse. What is worse than you've been told is passive investing. Passive investing is an unmitigated disaster for everyone who has had anything to do with it. It's a disaster for the investors who have tried it and who have lost large percentages of their life savings. It's a disaster for the experts who have pushed it and marketed it and advocated it. It's a disaster for the discussion boards that have, seen it. The nastiness that's at the core of this ugly, non-rational idea, this pure emotion idea, the ugliness it has brought to discussion boards, where we've seen community member turn against community member, we've seen entire discussion boards burn to the ground. All of this is the fault not of stock investing, but of passive investing. Passive investing is the enemy. Passive investing is the dark side of stock investing. Passive investing is the strategy that results from giving in totally to the get-rich-quick impulse. And if we can, it's hard to acknowledge it. After you've done that, you become locked in. You don't want to acknowledge all the harm you've done to yourself and to others, to your family, to your friends, to your community members. But what causes human beings to change? You know, I've compared passive investing to alcoholism in numerous podcasts. An alcoholic is obviously not a rational actor. An alcoholic is someone who gives in to his dark side, looking for some temporary relief from some sort of problem, becomes addicted, puts his marriage at risk, his job at risk, his money at risk, his health at risk. How does the alcoholic break that addiction? Pain. I had a podcast, not a podcast, a blog entry not too long ago that I called "I Hope You Suffer." What a strange title for a blog entry. But the point of it was that it wasn't about investing, but the same principle applies. Suffering causes us to reevaluate old beliefs. I recently read a book by C.S. Lewis, The Problem of Pain, and he talks about, if you are a Christian, why does God cause us to suffer such pain? It's one of the hardest questions that someone who believes in God has to struggle with. And, just in short, the answer is that sometimes we need pain to learn things that we need to learn. If we never suffered pain, we would be drawn in bad directions. It's just something in human nature that is that way. And so we've lost $8 trillion, and I certainly don't mean to make light of it. Many, many, many people have suffered great financial pain, great financial misery. But there's good that can come from this, and the good is expressed in these words that I received from Michael Kitsis, 2-3 hours ago, in an email he sent me. I find that a lot of planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs and reevaluate them in light of the recent market events. Wow. That's what we need. So I want to discuss here, this podcast is entitled Saving William Bengen, and it's a play off of the movie Saving Private Ryan. But the point is, William Bengen, he's a financial planner. I'm certain that he's smart as smart can be. I don't know his work other than the fact that he's developed old school safe withdrawal rate research, but I take it as a matter of faith that he's smart as smart can be. Too many people that I know that I have respect for have great respect for William Bengen. So please don't take anything I say in this podcast as being as intended to as intended to question that. That's a given. There are comments that are critical of William Bengen, but they're critical of him just for mistakes that I think he may be making, but certainly not critical of his intelligence. But saving William Bengen, he's lost. He's a lost sheep. As are we all. Are we not? We're all lost sheep, especially after a market crash. We're always lost sheep, but especially, that's especially true after a loss of $8 trillion of accumulated wealth. So let's save William Bengen. Let's help him get back on the right track. Let's help him to understand how stock investing works. Let's help ourselves to get back on the right track and to start learning how stock investing works in the real world. All right. So let me just first describe the development. What is it we're talking about here? The development is summed up in an article that appeared at Bloomberg.com. And let me see. The best way to do this might be to read. I'll read passages from the email that I sent to Michael Kitsis last Thursday. I won't read it all, but I'll read passages. Michael, I hope things have been going well with you since we last talked. Then I say, you noted in one of your emails from August that I'm moderating a panel session at the NAPFA Northeast Regional Conference in Hershey, Pennsylvania this November, and the topic is safe withdrawal rates. And my panelists will be Bill Bengen and John Gutton, Arguably the two leading research on safe withdrawal rates from the financial planning community. So I quote Michael saying that. So the reason I was contacting him is that I had seen this article discussing Bill Bangen and wanted to bring it to Michael's attention with the hope that he would bring it up with Bill when they meet. And I say, there's an article at Bloomberg.com revealing Bangen to be a recent convert to short-term market timing. Here's an excerpt from the article at Bloomberg. Bangen also is keeping his clients out of equities. Normally, he says, he believes in traditional asset allocation. But quote, this is a quote from Bangen, this is one of those rare instances when duck and cover is appropriate, end of quote. Now, this is Rob Bennett. I'm going back to my email to Michael. Yucko. This is not long-term market timing, which I very much advocate. This is short-term timing, the bad kind of market timing. Do you share my reaction? And now I'm going to skip ahead a bit. It is, of course, not my intent to mock Bangen. As always, my intent is to point out the flaws of the passive investing model and the old-school SWR methodology, which is the product of the passive investing mindset. Then I point out that people like Buffett and Bogle and McHale have been urging us, they've been urging middle-class investors to hold their stocks or to buy more. And I point out that their argument is that if you like stocks where they were purchased, if you like stocks when they were priced far higher than they are today, you should love them now. And I say that's true, but it ignores the emotional reality that Buffett and Bogle and McHale were not warning people of the dangers of going with high stock allocations at the prices that applied 12 months ago. People have been shocked by the size of the price drop because they were not warned of its inevitability by the quote-unquote experts. It is this shock that is the problem. It is this shock that has caused Bangen's conversion to short-term market timing, in my view, of course. Still reading from my email to Michael. Excessive emotion in one direction leads to excessive emotion in the other direction. This is my message that passive investing is a purely emotional approach. There is zero reason in common sense to believe that it is safe or sensible to leave your stock allocation at the same level when prices rise to insanely dangerous levels. There is zero evidence in the historical data that this could ever work in the real world. Yet, how many experts have told us to do just that? How many experts have told us, stay the course, buy and hold, buy on the dips, stocks for the long run. Don't time the market, right? How many times have you heard that? Don't time. It's impossible to time the market. How many times have you heard that? That's emotional. That's telling people we all have that get-rich-quick impulse that says, oh, I'd like to own stocks when they're high-priced. Sure, my common sense tells me it's dangerous, but I want to get in on this. People are making money for nothing. I want a piece of that action. And the experts say, yeah, go for it. And this is where the trouble begins. It's partly our fault because we are flawed humans. We have that get-rich-quick impulse inside us. And it's partly the fault of the experts for buying into this crazy passive investing idea. And so it's all circular. We're doing what we want to do. The experts are giving us bad advice based on the passive investing model, based on the efficient market theory. And we're happy to have them do that. We don't want to correct them. We don't want to hold their feet to the fire and say, no, this doesn't make sense. No, the numbers don't add up. Because we like being told this bad advice. We like it until we lose $8 trillion. And hopefully the circle now is being broken. It's being challenged. That's what I feel Michael is saying in those words. People are starting to have doubts. They're starting to, and William Bangen is starting to have doubts, right? That's what this is all about. When I say saving William Bangen, I mean saving all of us. He's the focus of this podcast, but it's really about saving all investing, quote-unquote, experts, and all middle-class investors as well, ultimately. Bangen, I'm still reading from my email. Bangen is viewed as an expert in this field. So are Buffett, Bogle, and Malkiel. Yet he is doing precisely the opposite of what Buffett, Bogle, and Malkiel are advising middle-class investors to do. What are middle-class investors to believe? If the experts cannot get their story straight, how are middle-class investors to make sense of what they are saying? Then I say, you know, my view is that Bangen is wrong about short-term timing, but that Buffett, Bogle, and Malkiel are wrong about passive investing, and that Bangen's errors are largely the result of his too easy acceptance of the errors of these other quote-unquote experts. The bottom line, none of us can be true experts until the flaws of the passive investing model that were discovered decades ago are widely discussed by all who aspire to expertise in this field. We learn together by talking things over amongst ourselves, and we cannot get to square one until we hear some straight talk from the big names in the field. We are all capable of better. And what I'm hearing Michael say in his email today is, it's happening. It's happening, people. I find that a lot of planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs. That's what we need to hear. So, I'll read through some comments at the Bogleheads.org board about William Bangen's conversion to short-term market timing. Daryl 40 says, Bangen, as some may know, pioneered studying safe withdrawal rates and the quote-unquote 4% rule. But I can't see how that works if you don't maintain your equity allocation and move to market timing. Well, Daryl is correct. The 4% rule will not work if you don't maintain your equity allocation. What people are doing who are, you know, I've been pointing out for years, since dating back to 2002, that people following the retirement advice of today, which is these safe withdrawal rate studies are universally used, all virtually universally used. If you look for retirement planning advice on the internet or in the newspaper, it's all based on these studies. And the studies are analytically invalid. The studies get the number wrong, wildly wrong. And, of course, the trouble with the studies is once stocks start going down, that's when people realize the studies are wrong. The studies, of course, were always wrong, and anyone who calculated the number properly would have known they were wrong, you know, a long, long time ago. But it's not popular to say that. At times when prices are high, people do not want to hear that. Scott Burns told us the reason we haven't heard about the flaws of the safe withdrawal rate studies that we discovered back in 2002 is that, quote, it is information most people do not want to hear. You cannot, this is taboo. You cannot tell people that the safe withdrawal rate numbers are wrong. So people learn about it, of course, when they see all their money disappearing, then they become more concerned. And they look at it and they say, wait a minute, I'm going to be bankrupt. I can't continue. And that's when they pull their money out. But of course, if you pull your money out, the whole house of cards topples to the ground, because what's happening is these people bought stocks at high prices and now they'll be selling stocks at low prices. Well, that doesn't work. That doesn't work at all. Part of the purpose of a safe withdrawal rate analysis is to help people to know what sort of allocation they can go with so that they won't need to sell stocks at low prices. Do you see? If you report the numbers accurately, and that means using a valuation adjustment, if you report the numbers accurately, you will not need to sell your stocks at times of low prices. Those who were following valuation-informed indexing, that's the approach to indexing that I recommend at the website. If you were following valuation-informed indexing a year ago, you were probably going with a stock allocation of something between 20% and 30%. Very low stock allocation. So, say you were at 20% and we suffered, it was about a 40% price drop that we've suffered. That's a significant hit. Even if it were 50%, it wasn't quite, but even if it was 50%, that would be a loss of 10% of your total portfolio. If you were at a 30% allocation, that's a loss of 15%. That's a serious hit by, to be sure. But if you are a long-term investor, you need to be able to take that kind of hit. You need to be able to take a 10% hit or a 15% hit. Now, what if you were at 60%, 70%, 80%? John Graney's study says 74% is optimal. Optimal at all times. Say you're at 74%. You've just suffered a wipeout. You've suffered, you've lost years of saving. You've suffered. You can't recover from that kind of hit. You realistically cannot expect to recover. And of course, there's no guarantee we're not going to have a bigger hit. We could well see a 50% drop in prices from today. We won't necessarily see that, but we could see that. So, these people are people who have relied on these old school studies. They're taking their money out of stocks. Not that they're wrong. I'm trying to discuss in this podcast that they're partly wrong and they're partly right. But the point is, the errors in the old school studies are what put them in this situation. But Darryl is quite right that the whole house of cards tumbles to the ground if you can't maintain your equity allocation. And you can't maintain your equity allocation if you follow the old school studies or if you follow passive investing. There's never been a time in history when middle class investors have been able to maintain their equity allocation during the price crash that always follows a time when passive slash emotional investing becomes popular. These sorts of strategies, these outlandish strategies, become popular at wild bull market tops. They only become popular when prices are madly out of control. And when prices are madly out of control, they have to fall because otherwise the market itself would collapse. But I don't know of any evidence that middle class investors have ever been able to hold on to their stocks. And of course, that's one of the reasons prices fall. They fall because people are forced to sell their stocks, and then as prices come down, they come down even harder because they come down, like, say, 40% we just saw, and then more people sell, and then they go down further. So the whole idea of ignoring the historical data, ignoring the effect of valuations, it's a bad, bad, bad idea. And Darryl is pointing out one of the reasons why it can never work, because if you abandon your equity allocation and move to market timing after a price drop, you're asking for trouble. The right thing to do is to set your equity allocation properly in the first place, so that you don't have to abandon it after a price drop. If you set your allocation reasonably, you will not need to abandon it. All right. Bob 90245 says, quoting Bill Bengen, he says, that's a polite way of saying Bengen's statement that this is one of those rare instances where duck and cover is appropriate. Bob says, that's a polite way of saying I've capitulated. Well, I guess that's fair. I guess that's fair. I mean, Bengen's statement is that his clients are out of equities. Now, I don't know what Bengen's justifications are, and I'm going to read some of Michael's email, near the end of the podcast. And Michael says that he does not necessarily believe that Bengen took his clients out of equities in response to the price crash, that perhaps he did so before the price crash. If that's so, that puts things in a different light. I hope to hear from Michael. I'm going to ask him in my response that if Bengen tells him, what the story is, that he can fill us in, and perhaps some of these comments are a bit unfair. I don't know the reality. I do not know. All I know is what Bengen said at Bloomberg, and he said there that he says he believes in traditional asset allocation, but, quote, this is one of those rare instances when duck and cover is appropriate. I don't, that's the only thing we really have heard from Bengen. It's a The question I guess you have to ask is, how would he know? How would he know that this is a circumstance where duck and cover is appropriate, unless he has some, I don't know. The passive investing school argues that there's no way to know the future, and I am not aware of a way to know the future either. So on that, I'm in accord with my friends at bogleheads.org. I don't understand how Bengen would know that this is one of those cases where duck and cover is appropriate. But perhaps he has something to say about that, and perhaps he will tell Michael, and Michael will report it to us, I hope. Another poster, Cyber Bob, says, he takes the words of Bengen and says, this instance, Bengen had said, this is one of those instances where duck and cover is appropriate. This instance, as in after the Dow has already dropped 5,000 points? What happened to his advice for black hole retirees, those who retire into a bad bear market, that they actually increase their equity allocation? It sounds like he's being very reactive. Pity. As Bengen's written some really good research papers. Well, again, we don't know for certain how reactive he's being. But it does sound that way. I do think it's fair to say when he says this instance is a case where duck and cover is appropriate. We don't know why Bengen seems to think that this is a case where timing the market makes sense if in general it does not. A poster named Ken250 says, everybody's running scared, especially new or soon to be retirees, just at the worst possible time. They've seen their portfolios take a 30% hit. Ouch! Many are taking on a bunker mentality. Can you blame them? Well, that's the problem with getting retirement numbers wrong. People seem to lose sight of the fact that retirees are vulnerable, more vulnerable than any other investor. When people come to they do a Google search, retirement planning tools or safe withdrawal rates, they're trying to get prudent advice. They're not trying to get the riskiest advice imaginable. And that's what they're getting in these old school studies. The old school studies, something that people always say to me when I say we should report the safe withdrawal rate accurately, they say, "Oh, Rob, 4% might work. You don't have a crystal ball. You don't know for sure that 4% won't work." And that's entirely true. I do not have a crystal ball. I don't know that 4% won't work. Even at the top of the price bubble, the historical data indicated that a 4% withdrawal had a 30% chance of working. So all of the retirees who relied on the safe withdrawal rate studies back at the top of the bubble, they had a 1 in 3 chance of their retirement surviving. What I object to is the claim that that's safe. When you put together a retirement plan that has only a 1 in 3 chance of surviving, that's not safe. That's not safe. No way, no how. Through much of the time period from 1995 through the first part of 2008, it wasn't as bad as that, but during that time period, retirees had a 50% chance of their retirement surviving, possibly in some cases a 70% chance of their retirement surviving. But that's not safe. 50% chance of survival? No, that's not safe. 70% of chance of survival? No, that's not safe. The way that John Walter Russell and I define it in the Retirement Risk Evaluator, a calculator at my website and also at John's site. John's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. You'll find all sorts of material at John's site that is not available at mine. John is the researcher, not me. We define a retirement that has a 95% chance of surviving. That's safe. That's how we define safe. And we say if it has 80% chance of surviving according to the historical data, we call it reasonably safe. I can see a retiree saying, I'm willing to go with 80%. That's safe enough. So we call that reasonably safe. But 30%? No, that's not safe. It's irresponsible to tell people who are looking for information on how to put together a safe retirement plan a withdrawal rate that makes their retirement highly risky. The old school studies give information on how to put together a high risk retirement plan. And risky and safe are not synonyms. I've said this many times. They are antonyms. They are not synonyms. If you're going to give information on how to put together a risky retirement, you should say, this is a risky retirement. You may want to take a chance. It may survive. We don't know. We don't have a crystal ball. But this is a risky plan. This 4% is risky at these valuation levels. Not safe. That's always been the focus of my concern. It's this claim that taking a withdrawal rate the historical data shows is high risk and calling it safe or even 100% safe. That's the phrase Graney uses in his study. The 4% withdrawal is 100% safe, even when the historical data says there's only a 30% chance of those retirements surviving. So Ken 250 is pointing to this problem. He's saying everybody's running scared, especially new or soon-to-be retirees. You see, retirees are particularly vulnerable. And when we do studies aimed at retirees, we should make an effort to report accurately what the historical data says on the subject that these people are looking for information on. Many of these people do not look at the methodologies. They do not study the methodologies. I know this from posting on discussion boards. They see that there are big name experts, calling this withdrawal rate safe, and they believe there must be something to it. They take it on faith, essentially. All right. Here, boy, I found this comment so interesting. This is a comment by Robert T. He says, some investors are exiting equities while some are borrowing to invest in them. And he describes Clare College, one of Cambridge University's oldest seats of learning. He says, Clare seems to have played a remarkably shrewd game. It sold American equities in 1999 when valuations were ridiculously high and is making this bet. They're putting their money in stocks now, only after global stock markets have almost halved this year and at a time when the cost of long-term inflation-linked borrowing is very low. Unlike a bank, it does not have to mark its positions to market. Unlike a fund manager, it does not have to worry about losing clients. One suspects the Dons will still be enjoying their sherry in 2048. I think that's actually a quote from The Economist magazine. And then Robert T. says, which will turn out to be right? I don't know. Just staying the course. Hope it's sherry and not Clare Bridge. Well, I think those investors at Clare College are very, very, very smart indeed. They moved out of U.S. equities in 1999 when valuations were sickeningly high, sickeningly, frighteningly, dangerously high. And now they're moving their money back into stocks when stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. That makes all the sense in the world in Rob Bennett's view. That's rational investing all the way. That's valuation-informed indexing all the way. That's smart. That's emotionally smart investing. You don't go along with what the experts are telling you when they're all caught up in the fever of passive investing. You protect your portfolio, you protect your assets, and then when stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition, then you invest heavily in stocks. Does this mean we're not going to see a big price drop? No. We might see a 50% price drop. The people at Clare College, they don't care. They don't need that money in the next year or two or three or five. They're taking a long-term bet, a bet they were not willing to take in the prices that applied in 1999 when stocks were scary as all get out, but it's a bet they're willing to take now that prices are back in the reasonable level. That makes all the sense in the world in my view. And here's a quote that I especially like. This is also from The Economist. I don't know if it's from the same article or not. This is quoted by a community member at bogleheads.org, Jay Bard, but it's a quote from The Economist magazine. This comment is worth its weight in gold. The very belief that equities always rise over the long term may sow the seeds of its own destruction. It can lead to investors blindly buying shares at any price and pushing valuations up to ridiculous levels. Well, that's exactly right on. Start telling people that it's safe to invest in stocks regardless of the price, And you've just doomed the investors who listen to you. Because that's, you know, that message is like catnip to a cat. It's financial porn. It's appeal to the emotions. We've all got the get-rich-quick scheme, get-rich-quick impulse in us. Sooner or later, investors are gonna buy into that idea. And when they do, we're all doomed. We're all doomed. Because when investors start investing passively, prices go to insane levels for all of us. The passive investors get hurt worse. They're the ones that suffer the losses. The rational investors pull back and protect their assets. But the rational investors are kept out of stocks for years. That's a penalty. We all suffer. We all suffer. When passive investing is promoted widely, all investors suffer, both the emotional investors and the rational investors. So it's bad news all the way around. It's bad news all the way around. I'm going to say those words again from The Economist. The very belief that equities always rise over the long run may sow the seeds of its own destruction. It can lead to investors blindly buying shares at any price and pushing valuations up to ridiculous levels. True. True words. Good words. Good words. There is no world in which it's always a good idea to buy stocks. Come on. We all need to grow up. I don't like to insult my readers. If you're a passive investor, I apologize. But we all need to grow up. We've got our retirement money in stocks today. Most middle-class investors, we need to start investing in stocks in reasonable, sensible, realistic ways. And believing the price doesn't matter is not realistic, reasonable, sensible investing. Not. All right. Here's a comment from John Walter Russell. After I sent the email to Michael, John sent me this comment. I think John felt that I was being a little too critical of Bill Bangen, and he says, keep in mind, you once wrote an article that sometimes it is best to sell early when the market turns sour. From the point of view of that article, not knowledgeable of valuation-informed indexing, Bangen is doing the right thing. Most likely, there will be good re-entry points in the future, gradually adding stocks around PE 10, 15, and really loading up when PE 10 falls to 10 or so. Well, I did not mean to be harsh on Bill Bangen. My view is that Bill is right emotionally, and you know, Bogle, Malkiel, Buffett are right intellectually. I agree with Buffett, Bogle, Malkiel that stocks today offer a strong long-term value proposition. So in that sense, Bangen, I say, is wrong to take his clients out of stocks. However, I have said, John is right that I had an article saying that it's best to sell early when the market, he says when the market turns sour. Well, the point I had in the article at my website, I forget the title of it. It's, what section? It's probably in the stock drunk section. I can't recall the title. It was defending. You see so many articles when people start taking their money out of stocks, they get attacked by passive investors. Oh, you're dumb. You don't know stocks for the long run? You don't know that? You don't know timing doesn't work? You know, they get attacked, and I don't like that. And I think the people lowering their stock allocations are the sensible ones. So I defended them, and, it was called something like a case for lowering your stock allocation, in a market downturn. I don't recall the exact title. I'm almost sure it's at the stock drunk section of the site if you want to check that out. But John is right that I recommended that. Now, that article doesn't really apply in today's circumstances too much because the thought in the article was that prices would gradually go down. So, we were at one time a PE 10 level of 44. So obviously if we fell to say 30, and people would take their money out in response, I would say that was smart because 30 is still insanely high. So you're doing a good thing to get your money out at 30. Even if people mock you and ridicule you, I don't care. The value proposition is poor. So you're doing the right thing. Now today we're at about 16. At the low, we were at about 15. If we're down to 15, 16 on the PE 10 level, That's sort of a different story. Going by the numbers, it's not smart to take your money out of stocks at 15 or 16 because the long-term value proposition is good. So I wouldn't say that intellectually that makes sense. However, I did a podcast on this. I think it was called Surviving the Stock Crash, something like that. What I said is that obviously, if you're a rational investor, you should now be increasing your stock allocation. If you were going with a 20% allocation 12 months ago, you want to be increasing it to 50 or 60% today. You want to be moving your allocation up at today's prices. But say that you were going with a high stock allocation. Say you were going with 70%, and now you've suffered a wipeout. What should you be doing? Well, in those circumstances, 70% is certainly on the high side, especially if you've been out of stocks and you're moving in, 70% might be okay. But if you've already suffered a wipeout, I think that's far too high because emotionally you are damaged, emotionally you're frightened. And we may see a 50% drop from here. A 50% drop would put us at a PE10 level of 8. That's not a surprising PE10 level after a massive bull market, in the aftermath of a massive bull market. So you need to be prepared emotionally for a 50% price drop from here. And if you've already suffered a wipeout, I doubt that you are. So in that case, I would say lower your allocation. If you're at 70 and you've suffered a wipeout, lower it so that you don't end up selling everything at the bottom. But if you've been out of stocks or if you've had a low allocation, I would be gradually increasing your allocation because the long-term value proposition has improved. Now, John is saying, you know, there's this question of will there be good reentry points in the future? He says, you know, we may get down to 15 again or we may get even down to 10. I certainly agree that may happen. But if you're a rational investor, I would not be counting on it. There's certainly reason to believe in the three earlier times when prices went to insane levels, we did indeed go to PE10 levels much lower than those that apply today. But there is no economic reason why that must happen. It's emotional. If we go lower than today, we're going lower not because of it's an economic reality requiring it. We're doing it because investors are overly emotional because they've bought into this passive investing nonsense. So I wouldn't want to be staking everything on that. That's not as sturdy a foundation as, you know, when we were at a PE10 level of 30, I was saying, we know darn well we're going to have a price crash. I cannot say that today. So I would be a little more cautious about betting too many chips on a lower PE10 level. I would, my personal advice, and talk to other people about this. Don't go by what Rob Bennett tells you, but my personal advice is to hedge a little bit. You know, you put some money in stocks now, perhaps 50%, so that you're covered in the event that we don't go down any lower, and also keep something off the table in the event that we're going to go a good bit lower, and you can buy stocks at, you know, you can buy additional stocks at even lower prices. Stocks are not cheap today. They're not low priced. So there's no reason to put all your eggs in one basket. So why not go with 50%? And then if we go to a PE10 level below 12, then increase your allocation some more. But it would be extreme, in my view, to be totally out of stocks at today's prices for the typical middle-class investor. All right, so is Bengen doing the right thing or the wrong thing? If he's recommending a zero allocation, I think that's extreme. If he's recommending that his clients lower their allocation, it depends on how high they were before. If they were 50% before, I don't know that I'd be lowering. I don't know. If they were 70% before, I would be lowering. Yeah, 70% is too high for a retiree. That's who I think we're talking about retirees here that Bengen is advising. So there's different angles to look at it. If they've suffered emotional shock because they bought into the passive investing model when they structured their retirement plans, which is precisely what they did if they followed Bengen's safe withdrawal rate studies, If they did that, I think a good case can be made that they should take all of their money out of stocks, as Bangen is advising, and just take a year and just learn about the flaws of the passive investing model, learn about the merits of the rational investing model, learn what the historical data says, and then get back into stocks. It's possible that they will miss an upturn over the course of the next 12 months. But that risk is a risk you have to take. The important thing is to get your emotions straight. And if you've been following this passive investing junk, you know, you're in trouble of making one mistake after another after another. You've got to get out of that rut. You've got to get out of that jam you're in. And I think it makes all the sense in the world to just pull out of stocks for 6 months or 12 months, whatever it takes to get emotionally balanced, to have the emotional balance so that you can invest in stocks with confidence. You can never invest in stocks with confidence so long as you're a passive investor, in Rob Bennett's opinion. So if it takes being out of stocks altogether for 6 months, that I think would be good advice. If that's the advice Bangen is giving, I think it's good advice. I don't know that that is, and I don't think it is. From the way he worded it, it doesn't sound like it. But I don't know for sure. All right. Now I want to read. I want to read Michael Kitsis's comments that I received today. He says, Rob, I will be having dinner with Bill tonight in advance of the panel session tomorrow. Although I don't know how much we'll be getting into this topic during the panel session itself, I'm sure it will be part of the dinner conversation. It should be interesting. And then the wonderful comment that I quoted before. As a side note, I find that a lot of planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs and reevaluate them in light of recent market events. However, I don't know to what extent Bangen is reacting to the markets versus actually espousing the beliefs that you have. I don't think he went to cash in response to the market declines. I think he actually had a lot of his clients out in advance of most of the declines. Well, that would obviously be good, you know, that would be good news to hear. Of course, I'll get more clarification tonight. It's one thing to be selling to cash after the severe drops happen. It's another to account for valuation, as well as other economic signals, to get defensive with your clients ahead of time. Although we didn't take, he's talking about his own firm, although we didn't take such an extreme position, we've had our clients significantly under-allocated to equities all year based on these risks. Well, applause for Michael Kitsis and his firm. Well ahead of the crash, of course, inevitably after the fact, we all still wish we'd gone even further than we did. I don't really agree with that parenthesis. I don't see any reason to criticize yourself. If you had people going with lower stock allocations, you did good work. So, I mean, I understand the point he's making, but the reality is we never know when these things are coming. So, you know, I wouldn't, if you were giving good advice, you gave good advice. And what happens in the outside world, I just consider, you know, it happens. But the job is to give good advice. I wouldn't call us market timers, though. I disagree on that. If you lower your stock allocation at times when stocks are dangerous, I view you as a market timer. Michael seems to view market timer as a sort of a bad word. Many, many, many people do, of course. I wouldn't call us market timers, though. To me, it's simply prudent risk management. Well, I certainly agree with that. Changing your stock allocation in response to extreme valuation levels is indeed prudent risk management. So again, applause. But overall, I don't make such a distinction about, quote, being tactical and, quote, a bad market timer. It's a very slippery slope. If I take my 60% equity client to 40%, it's being tactical and defensive. But going to 0% is a market timer. Where's the line? What if I took them down to 30% equities, 20% equities, 10% equities? Where's the line? In short, I don't think the relative change is the deciding factor in the first place. It's the inputs you use to make the decision. If you're doing technical analysis and moving in and out continuously, it's market timing. If you're using the principles of valuation and economic analysis to evaluate high and low risk periods, it's tactical and it's risk management, regardless of how extreme of a shift you ultimately make. Boy, those are intelligent comments. They're encouraging comments because They get to the heart of things. This is what everybody should be talking about. This is what I would like to see being discussed at all of the retire early boards and all of the indexing boards. This paragraph, this is what we all should be talking about. This is investing. This is talking about how investing works instead of all this gibberish. You know, we've spent 6 years at our boards talking about, are we going to allow honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and on valuations, or are we going to ban it, or are we going to allow just a tiny, tiny little bit of it, or are we going to ban it altogether, and all this nonsense. What matters are the questions that Michael is pointing at here. How much, not should you change your allocation or not when prices get to insane levels. Of course you should. It's insulting. It's insulting to middle-class investors to be telling them that it's okay not to change your stock allocation when prices get to the levels they've been at from 1995 through 2008. It is insulting. I've lost patience with this nonsense. But how much? That's a legitimate question. How much? How much should you change? That's where we need intelligent people, including a lot of people who today call themselves passive investors. We need those people contributing to these discussions. We need their intelligence being brought to bear on a question that matters. A question that is a legitimate question. A question that makes sense. This is what it's all about. Now, I agree with more of what Michael says than I disagree. I agree strongly where he says, I haven't crafted my response to him, but I expect that what I'm going to say is that I agree where he says it's risk management. And he says it's the inputs you use to make the decision that really matter. That's what tells you, I agree. That's what tells you whether you're doing the right thing or not. Not how much you make the change. How much of a change you make is a judgment call. There is no right or wrong answer. Different people of intelligence and goodwill are going to come to different answers. And different financial circumstances and different life goals and different risk tolerance, all these things come into play. So there are no right answers. We could study this for 1,000 years and we're not going to know the right answers. There are no right answers. It's a judgment call. Judgment. But it's not a judgment call whether passive investing works or not. Passive investing cannot work. It's not possible for the human mind to imagine a scenario in which it does work. It's giving up human reason to believe that valuations are going to have zero effect. And if you leave your allocation at the same level, you're implicitly concluding that valuations are going to have zero effect. That makes no sense. That's abandoning human reason, and that can never be right. That can never be right. So yes, it's the inputs you use to make the decision that matter. If you're doing it based on valuations, you're doing it based on something real. If you're doing it because you've got a funny feeling that stocks are going to go down, well, that's a poor input. If you're doing it because the newspaper headlines are scaring you, that's a poor input. So I agree. Now, where I disagree with Michael is that he doesn't like the phrase market timing, it seems to me. He doesn't want to call what he's doing market timing. I think it is market timing. I don't understand. If you're changing allocations based on, you know, at different times, isn't that market timing? So I think he's just been cowed. He's been cowed by the passive investing mindset into thinking that market timing is somehow bad and you shouldn't market time. Well, I think what I'm going to say back to him is, say it loud, Michael. I'm a market timer and I'm proud. I'm not ashamed of being a market timer. Being a market timer means you've got sense. Being a market timer means you haven't abandoned human reason. That's all it means. Obviously, you want to be an effective market timer. You don't want to be a short-term market timer. You want to be a long-term market timer, to be sure. There's good ways of doing it, and there's bad ways. So, and he also has this phrase he uses about being tactical. And I won't go into it. I don't want to take time here, but I'm over 60 minutes already, but I've never understood why people, Michael's not the only one who does this. I've seen many people do it. They talk about lowering your allocation or increasing your allocation as being tactical. And I have no idea why they use the phrase tactical. It seems to me it's being strategic. Your allocation is a strategic decision. It's not tactical. It's if you're a short-term market timer, I suppose you could call it tactical. In other words, I think the market's going to go up over the next 6 months, so I'm increasing my allocation a little bit. That's tactical. I understand using it in that context, but when I change my market allocation, I don't change it for 6 months. I'm changing it because I think it's going to pay off over the next 10 years. So that's not tactical. That's strategic. I disagree on the terminology, but that's a small point. But I think Michael's comments are highly intelligent, highly helpful, and I'm grateful to him. And he cheered me up on top of all that with his comments about planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs. That really made my day. So I'll be responding to Michael, and I'll publish my response in my as the blog entry for Thursday. Today is Tuesday. Today is Monday, November 10th, and I'll be publishing Michael's comments Tuesday, November 11th, and then my response probably on Thursday, November 13th. But the bottom line on all this, let me see if I can find a quote here. I think there's a quote I may have already read it, but I'm going to read it again. There's a quote from my email to Michael that I sent last Thursday. My view, I'm going to read the whole two paragraphs here. The problem, in my view, is that the experts continue to ignore or hush up the findings of the academic research of recent decades that shows that the efficient market theory is nonsense. Humans are not rational actors. Humans are both rational actors and emotional actors. Changes in investor emotion are evidenced in changes in stock valuations. Valuations matter. Valuations affect long-term returns. It is not possible to calculate safe withdrawal rates accurately without making an adjustment for the valuation level that applies at the start date of the retirement in question. My view is that Bengen is wrong about short-term timing, but that Buffett less so than the other two, Bogle and McHale, are wrong about passive investing, and that Bengen's errors are largely the result of his too easy acceptance of the errors of these other experts. The bottom line, this is the point I wanted to make. The bottom line, none of us can be true experts until the flaws of the passive investing model that were discovered decades ago are widely discussed by all who aspire to expertise in this field. We learn together by talking things over amongst ourselves, and we cannot get to square one until we hear some straight talk from the big names in the field. We are all capable of better. We are all holding ourselves back by failing to work up the courage to bring the most important questions to the table. Those are my words to Michael last Thursday, and that's the message of this podcast, that we're hearing some good words. We're hearing that a lot of planners are starting to question their passive investing beliefs. And we've all suffered. We've all taken a big hit. Well, there's another side. We've been trying to knock down a wall. The Berlin Wall of investing is this idiotic belief in passive investing, that there's some universe, some alternate universe somewhere where it's sensible to stay at the same stock allocation regardless of valuations. There is no alternate universe. We have to invest our retirement money here on planet Earth. We have to be realistic about how investing works here on planet Earth. We need to tear down this wall. And when we tear down the wall, we don't only save William Bengen and William Bengen's clients, we save Michael Kitsis, and we save Rob Bennett, and we save Mel Lindauer, and we save John Graney, and we save John Walter Russell, and we save John Bogle, and we save Bill Bernstein, and we save Jonathan Clements. We save Scott Burns. And we save all middle-class investors. None of us know it all. We all need to be talking, but we need to stop talking about nonsense about whether we should allow honest posting on safe withdrawal rates or not. We need to be talking about substance. We need to be talking about the sort of considerations Michael talked about in his email. Not should we change our allocations or not. That's not the question. That question was resolved in May of 2002 when John Walter Russell put forward his research showing how dangerous the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are. That settled the question of whether we need to make changes in our allocations or not. What's the question on the table today for sane, sensible, caring, courageous, smart humans? The question on the table today is, how much should we change our allocations? And what sorts of considerations should we be taking into account? The things I discussed. Not all of us should be going with the same allocation today. One of the factors you need to look at is, have you been a passive investor? Are you emotionally rattled? And the emotionally rattled should be going with lower allocations today than those who have followed rational investing and have protected themselves from becoming emotionally rattled. Those questions need to be discussed. There is no cookie cutter answer to any of these questions. The phrase I've used in discussion boards for a long time now is, when we take down this wall, that's when the real fireworks, the good kind, begin. Good luck with your investing strategy. Take care.